Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
So, a lot of people these days are building their brand by pouring tons of money into traffic, A-B split testing, tracking every click. But deep down, they feel like something's not landing. It's almost like you wonder if they're coming across as desperate rather than confident. Maybe it's time to take a look at a cherished assumption in online marketing, namely that more information and more volume equals more authority. Not really, says our own Nathan Fraser. He's given me an advanced peek at his new book, The Signal. I was so excited by the refreshing ideas he has in there that I wanted him to talk about them on today's show, and he agreed. Look, Nathan says you should stop begging the algorithm and start commanding attention, and he has some proven ideas on how to do that, which he'll share with us today, just as I will share this with you right now. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast, and most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. So Nathan, what a switch, huh? You're in the interviewee seat today.
Yes, we'll see how this goes.
We will. So thanks for doing this. You know, I love this book. It is very contrarian. I think it's very true. There are a lot of things in there and that people are afraid to say, or maybe they can't articulate, or maybe they don't even know. But you say marketing that begs for attention becomes noise. Marketing grounded in conviction becomes signal. So what do you mean by this? And how can someone make sure that their marketing has minimum noise and maximum signal? And maybe you could start by explaining the difference between noise and signal in this context.
Yeah, so marketing today has become a volume game. Put out as much content as you can, put out as many offers as you can, be everywhere. And I take the exact opposite approach. I'm much more focused on a clear signal than just muddy noise. That seems to be the way that most marketing happens these days. I like to think of it like this. A lot of the social media marketing, especially nowadays, is the equivalent of like cheesy pickup lines. It's just attention grabbing. Hey girl, did it hurt when you fell from heaven? Because you look like an angel. It's just nonstop TikTok videos, grab trending audios, make a goofy video, try to get in the algorithm, try to go viral. And it's just attention grabbing. It doesn't work. It's lame. It devalues you as an offer owner. And it makes you look goofy. I don't like it. Direct response marketing, which is what some of us are actually decent at, is kind of the equivalent of having good game. It'll help get the conversion. It'll help get the girl into bed with you. It might get you into a relationship. That is the good marketers, the good content marketers out there. They understand this and they use it and it differentiates them. But it's still not the highest level. This book is all about the highest level, and that is the stuff that gets people obsessed with you. It's the stuff that makes people see your brand as a core part of their identity, that buying from anybody else would go against their identity. It'd feel like cheating, and so much to the fact that they line up to buy everything that you offer. They reject your competition, and they'll go out and promote your brand for you. That's what this book is all about, is how to position yourself as a founder, as a business leader, as somebody who your ideal market obsesses with, rather than just pays attention to, buys from whenever you're running an offer. The problem with most good marketing is as soon as you turn off the ads, the sales stop. I have mastered a system where we bring in tens of thousands of dollars every month, hundreds of thousands of dollars every month without advertising through this type of marketing. So that's kind of what the focus of this book is all about.
Okay. And you're saying you've actually done this with some of your clients, yeah?
I've done this with most of my clients.
All right. Let's talk about what you call the pratfall effect and how not coming across as perfect or trying to actually bonds a business with its customers as opposed to trying to appear cool and flawless. What's the context around that and how does that work?
We have this idea nowadays that everything has to be polished, especially if it's professional. You have to have perfect lighting. It can't show any of your flaws. You have to be the perfect leader that everybody looks up to. And number one, it's unrealistic. When you try to attempt that, something's going to come out and it's going to disillusion people. It's just the fact none of us are perfect, and we all know that none of us are perfect. And when somebody goes out of their way to make themselves look perfect, it raises red flags. If you're out on a date with somebody and they're doing their best to present themselves as the perfect partner for you, you know that they're hiding stuff. And so by letting out some of those flaws, by saying, hey, I'm not perfect, I'm good, but I'm not perfect, and I'm not right for everybody, first of all, you become more relatable. Your market can relate with you better. And sometimes those flaws actually become your best-selling features. So me and you, we're both big fans of the Remarkable tablet. It's great for taking notes. It's great for organizing ideas. It doesn't have Wi-Fi accessibility, so you can't get onto the internet with it, which is kind of a flaw in most people's idea. They would say, well, the iPad connects to Wi-Fi. Why won't the Remarkable connect to Wi-Fi? They took that flaw that some people would perceive as a flaw, and they said, hey, this is for an uninterrupted working experience. So by not being afraid to show your flaws and being able to reframe them as a selling feature makes you more relatable. It also says, hey, we're not for everybody, but if you understand the value of this perceived flaw, we are absolutely for you. And those are the people that will pass on buying the new iPad and instead take that money and buy the new version of the Remarkable.
Yeah, I'm also thinking, you know, for security-minded folks or for the paranoid among us, you could say it's air-gapped. It'll never be hacked because it's not connected to the internet. I guess you can connect it with a cable to a computer too, but you don't have to ever, right? You don't want to. So, yeah, that's a great example.
I think for marketers, another example of this would be Dan Kennedy and his no BS approach to things. It's very abrasive. It's not appealing to a lot of people. But for the people that get it, they're like, dude, Dan Kennedy is the man. He also is kind of a technophobe. He doesn't do social media. He doesn't do very much internet marketing. For some people, they say, well, if you're not on social media, if you're not constantly doing digital marketing, how are you going to attract your tribe? But Dan Kennedy proves you don't have to chase all of the digital trends that everybody's into, and you can still be the go-to guy for your community.
Yeah, I remember a story. I'm not going to get all the details exactly right, but Dan Kennedy was at a conference, and somebody walks up to him and asks him a really detailed marketing question, and he looks him in the eye and says, my consulting rate is $1,500 an hour, and walks away. Which kind of gets to your next point. I love what you say about over-explaining, that when people over-explain, it indicates an insecurity, and this repels rather than attracts the right people, the people that you want. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, so this is just part of human nature. If you don't feel secure you tend to over-explain things. I've noticed this even in myself with clients where I wasn't 100% sure something was going to work, so I would over-explain it to the client, but I was really trying to convince myself. And that comes through. And one of the things that I like to think about is a couple of kids getting caught stealing cookies out of the cookie jar. The kid that gets caught red-handed is going to go off on this. Well, actually, see, what happened was, and then the cookies fell, and then we were picking them up, and that's how the chocolate chip got on my hands, and the dog was barking, and then the telephone rang, and then it got to be late, and I was kind of hungry, so I already had the cookies. So by over-explaining, what we're doing is we're saying that we're trying to hide something, we're trying to hide our insecurities, and a lot of times this comes through in our marketing. We don't feel very secure in our offer, we don't feel very secure in ourselves, and we spend a lot of excess time over-explaining the value, over-explaining the creation, over-explaining, and a piece of copy that should have been five paragraphs long turns into five pages. This is one of the things that I realized when I first started working with you, was your copy is always very to the point, short, concise, doesn't have any fluff in there that doesn't need to be there, and very confident. I read your copy and I'm like, oh, he truly believes in this. He's not trying to convince himself. He's not trying to convince me. And that is something that a lot of people don't have in their copy, that conviction, that clarity. Instead, they try to overconvince, and they think if I can just add more and more detail, it'll be more and more convincing, but it actually does the opposite.
You know, if I can go off on a little, thank you for what you said about me. If I can go off on a little bit of a tangent, when you talk about over-explaining, I've noticed that when I ask AI to write something, it over-explains like crazy. And so I have to weed out all the insecurities and start from scratch on certain things it's written if I want to use them. Okay, another question. So there are two philosophies I've seen these days. On the one hand, there's omnipresence, where you show up everywhere all the time. And then there's being very selective, where you make it difficult to get access to you. And you're in favor of that second approach. Why do you feel that way?
There's a couple of reasons. The omnipresence is something that's almost become dogma in online marketing. You have to be on TikTok. You have to be on Instagram. You have to be posting five times a day. You have to have a YouTube channel. And there's a couple of things that does to your market. Number one, if you're always available, if you're always showing up, it devalues your presence. When somebody's always there, that abundance leads to contempt. Abundance breeds contempt. If somebody's always up in your space, you start to feel contempt towards them. Scarcity breeds value. It's just the law of supply and demand. The more scarce something is, the more valuable it becomes, the more perceived value it has. And selective access also creates a sense of importance. If somebody's always available, if they're always putting out content, oh, they must not have much going on in their business. They must not have much else going on. It's just like a lot of this goes back to just human relationships, human dynamics. If you text somebody and they text you back right away every single time, that signals that they don't have much going on in their life. They're low value. Same thing, if you're always posting content, if you're on every single platform five times a day, that signals you don't have much value. You don't have much going on. So the idea of omnipresence just creates more noise, and I'm all about creating that clear signal.
Great. I love that. Your advice for building an attractive signal that draws the right customers is to select, not sell. Okay, so what does that look like?
Let's say you're a copywriter and you have a specialty, or you're really good in a specific niche. Being able to say, if you're not in this niche, I'm not going to write for you. Or if you're not aligned with these type of values, I'm not going to write for you. And have that clear line in the sand saying, hey, you have to meet these qualifications or we can't work together. Being able to have those lines in the sand for your brand as well. Hey, if you don't believe in these values, we're just not for you. We're not going to bend our values to try and get the sale. When you show people that you're willing to bend your values, when you show people that you're willing to ignore your own boundaries in order to get their money, it sends off signals of desperation. It sends off signals of, I don't believe in my own worth. And then that makes them subconsciously say to themselves, well, I don't believe in your worth either. So being able to selectively say, hey, this is who we're for, this is who we're not for, this is what we're about, these are our non-negotiables, these are our values, these are our villains. If you can do that, it creates a feeling of bonding with your brand. It creates a feeling that you are a confident leader and that they can get in line and follow you. But if you're constantly bending, if you're saying, I'm just going to sell to anybody, I'm not selective, it sends the opposite signal and it doesn't create that brand loyalty, that devotion, that obsession that I'm always going for with my clients.
Yeah, I mean, this takes a certain amount of guts because, you know, the first reaction of the brain that's not already used to this and hasn't seen the value in it, and I have, I really like it, and I think I abide by this one a lot myself, in my own business, is, well, I'm going to miss out on all of this, on all these people that don't fall in within these parameters, within these limits. But you know, there's an old saying, if your market is everybody, your market is nobody. And so what you're talking about here is taking that to the next level and saying, okay, who is my market and who's not my market? If you're not my market, don't even bother. Go away. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that's yeah. Not too bad.
No, and girls will do this thing called shit testing where they'll just test to see whether you have a spine or a backbone. And they're not doing it to be mean. They're doing it because they're looking for a good leader. They want to make sure that you're not somebody who bends every time they get emotional, or you're not somebody who bends every time they test you. The market does the same thing. They want to make sure that you're a good leader before they decide to follow you. And if you say, I'll compromise on my values. I'll compromise on my boundaries. I'll compromise on my price. If you're not somebody who's willing to stand and say, no, these are non-negotiables, you don't build that sense of obsession that creates that brand loyalty that I'm always looking for.
Okay, good. One of my favorite parts, probably my favorite part of the book, is in a chapter called Belief is the Real Funnel. And this is so different from when anyone else I've ever heard of says. I noticed there's 5 steps in the funnel, and Apple somehow got the first belief in this 5 belief sequence to become part of popular culture. Could you go through these beliefs and make some suggestions about how you create them in an actual funnel?
Yeah, so there's 5 beliefs that people have to adopt before there's 4 beliefs that they have to adopt before they buy, and then there's a 5th belief that they have to adopt that makes them obsessed with your brand. The cool. First belief is that it works, your offer actually can deliver.
And that's the Apple thing where I don't think it was like 100% widespread, but among the cognoscenti, among the knowing ones, it was Apple, it just works, you know. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah, they just spelled it out. But you have to believe it'll work before you buy it. You have to believe that it'll work for you. It might work for Guru X, an online marketing tool that brings in an increased 18% on your conversions. Well, it might work for Guru X, who has a giant email list, but my email list is only 400 people. Will it work for me? So not only does it have to work, I have to believe it'll work for me. I have to believe that you, the founder, the company, the brand, you actually get me. You understand me. You understand what I'm going through, my pains, my fears, my desired outcomes that I'm looking for. then I have to believe in you. I have to believe that you can deliver, that I can trust you. Those four, it works, it'll work for me, they get me, and they can deliver. They have to be in place to make the sale. The fifth one, this will help me express who I want to be. This will help me express my identity to the world. By buying this, it helps me show who I am to the world. That's the fifth one. That gets left out a lot in marketing. But if you can do that, by buying Nike, I'm showing that I care about being the top of the top athletes. By buying Apple, I'm showing that I care about innovation. I care about being and thinking different. By buying a Harley Davidson, I'm showing that I've got a rebellious nature. I go against the grain. If I believe that your product or your service helps me express who I am or who I want to be to the world, that's the thing that becomes glue between you and your buyer.
So how do you weave this into your messaging, your marketing, your lead magnets, your content? Do you send out case studies and proof points where people are saying, oh man, you know, I love Nathan's new software because it works and it works for me. And when they kept me, I trust it. Is that how you do it?
That's part of it. A lot of it is just in the content itself, showing, hey, we get you. We understand the pain points. We're going to talk about this pain point. We understand what you're trying to do. We're going to talk about this desired outcome and how to get it. That stuff usually gets the it works, it'll work for me, and they get me part. And then being a real, grounded, no BS leader and just showing results. I love to post when we have a ad campaign or when we have a content campaign that brings in a whole bunch of conversions without spending a single dollar on ads. I'll grab screenshots. I'll show the video that did it. I'll show the comment section of people saying, I want this.
It's a good thing this is called Copywriters Podcast and not Advertising Podcast. Hey, go ahead.
But by just showing results, that shows I can trust that they'll deliver part. And then the last part, this will help me better express who I am. This is a thing that we do that most people don't do. And that comes down to the attacking the villains, throwing rocks at the enemies, expressing, planting flags on the hills that we're willing to die on, and incorporating that, speaking the language of the people that we're trying to sell to and letting them know, hey, we're not only one of you, we're willing to be the person that climbs to the top of the hill and plants the flag that nobody else is willing to plant. That right there, if you can do that, then by buying from you, they can do that. And that's really what it's all about.
That's really cool. I want to ask you one thing. This one's a bit of a brain twister for me, but I mean, it's one of those things that I know it's true, but I can't explain it. Maybe you can. You're right. Identity closes deals long before logic ever enters the room. So what does that mean? How do you determine how your product changes your prospect's sense of identity?
So there's two things of this. There's the offer owner identity, and then there's the buyer identity. And I think of it like this. For the offer owner, sometimes you walk into a room and you automatically know who's in charge of the room. They're not having to explain, hey, I'm the boss here and I've built this company and this is why you should trust me and I've got all these letters behind my name. They don't have to do that. You walk in and their energy, right away, you know who's in charge. That's one part where identity closes the deal before logic enters the room. The other part is, if you can help me express the identity that I want to express, I want people to look at me and know I'm tough and you don't mess with me, or I'm sensitive and I'm here for your needs, or you want people to look at you and know I take my health serious or I take my business serious. Instead of logically explaining how it all does that, just embody that. Just help them understand just by looking at you, now people will know. Just by having that Nike swoosh logo on your sweatsuit, people will automatically know what you're all about. Just by having the Rolex on your wrist, people will automatically know what you're about. When your offer can help transmit your buyer's desired identity without saying a word. They don't have to explain, this Rolex cost me $13,000 and it tells time like this and it recharges the battery when I walk. They don't have to say any of that. All they have to look at is the brand name Rolex and they automatically know what it says about you. That's when identity closes the deal before logic enters the room.
Yeah. I was on a mastermind call with Ted Prodromu and Tom Ruich, and Bond Halbert explained how his father explained why he wore a Rolex. He says, it's not because it's a better watch. It's because it reminds me of the value of my time. I thought, Oh, that's good. And I think it probably expresses that subtly to others as well. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's sending the signal, and you don't even have to explain it.
All right. So is this, you sent me a manuscript. I don't know if you're planning on publishing it or if it's only going to be, you only give it to clients or what. I mean, when's the book going to be available or how can people get it?
It should be, I'm in the middle of having it formatted for publication right now. It should be available by the time this episode goes live. So if you're listening to this, it's probably already available. And you'll be able to get it on Amazon. It's called The Signal. And I'll have a special deal if people want to go to my website, cultishcontent.com. We'll have it available there where you just pay the shipping and I'll get it out to you. I don't know how long that's going to be available, but at the time of listening, you can either go to Amazon and grab it, or you can go to cultishcontent.com and get it and just pay the shipping. And I do want to clarify one thing before we're out of here.
Sure.
This is not a marketing book. This is not a copywriting book. This is about the identity of an offer owner. If you're a business owner, if you're an offer owner, and you're having problems confidently selling, positioning yourself as somebody who should be leading a movement, if you feel like you're desperate for sales and something's not working with all the advice that you're getting from all the different marketing gurus out here, this is the book that you need to read, because this will show you all the things that you've been told that are wrong and what to do instead.
I'm going to go really far afield here, but I think you'll like where I land. So I was watching some of the actors from Better Call Saul on interviews, and the older brother, Charles, you know, he was a very buttoned down, tight ass kind of guy, super intelligent, and, you know, kind of offensive too, kind of annoying. And Jimmy McGill, who renames himself Saul Goodman, you know, the Joker, the prankster, the criminal. And they were talking about how their memory of when their mother had died, and she was holding on to Charles's hand and she said, "Jimmy." And what they realized was, yeah, Jimmy was a bad boy and he was a disappointment in terms of traditional achievement, but he made her laugh. So he was the one that was the favorite. And you're not talking about making people laugh here. It's a different thing, but it's in the same realm. It's about that unconscious connection, that emotional, almost primal bond that people have that really make you the favorite. And I think that's what, and you're right, that goes way beyond copywriting or marketing. That gets into identity and maybe even, I don't know, the neurological primal swamp, you know. And I love that about this. I don't know if anyone's really talked about before or even had the guts to, because you're saying a lot of things that are totally in opposition to the way most people, even so-called rebel marketers, look at things. But you've proven it, and you know, we should mention, because you mentioned in the book, you've been in areas that are not considered mainstream or socially acceptable by a lot of the normies, you know, firearms and marijuana and other things like that, right? Which, and you found ways to successfully market them when they are de facto prohibited, right? On social and a lot of advertising platforms. So you've really had to, you know, you've been in the cauldron. You've really had to find this out under a lot of pressure. And that's why I think it's so cool, because this will certainly work for a mainstream business that you know, isn't prohibited, but because people react the same way to everything. You know, if they have this gut feeling of, yeah, that's for me. Yeah, that works. Yeah, that helps me show who I am. Then,
yeah, just to add to that, I have a lot of experience in industries where traditional advertising just won't work. We're not allowed to run traditional ads. And so I had to build up a selling machine that was identity-based, that was built around the leader of the brand, that built a sense of belonging to the brand so that we could make sales without dumping money into ads. And I've worked in traditional industries as well where they can advertise, and this is the stuff that gets it to where people are already sold before they click your ad, and they land on your landing page just looking for the buy now button, and they comment in the comment section about how much they love your offer, and they leave all that social proof, and they share your ads. Now, how many people get their ads shared by their audience? Not very many.
I have my one client do. That does, and yeah, it totally blows my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. So whether you're in a restricted industry or whether you're in a traditional industry, this is the stuff that goes beyond traditional marketing and really builds that shared identity, that movement behind your marketing.
You know, what occurs to me as we're talking about this is, and maybe it connects or maybe it's the opposite, I'm not sure. In Gene Schwartz's Stages of Customer Awareness, the unaware customer, the strategy is to bring them together as a group with an identity, which is what you're talking about. What you've ended up finding, I doubt you went through Gene Schwartz's stage and said, okay, well, we'll use that one. It's just kind of what you found through trying stuff. But yeah, if you can give people who are sort of wandering around, you know, a sense of cohesion to an identity, oh, man, that sounds like that could really work. And obviously it has.
Absolutely. And I'll make sure to leave a link to where people can get it in the show notes for today's episode. And if anybody wants more episodes like this one, check out copywriterspodcast.com. Anything else before we're out of here, David?
Nope. That's it. Can't wait to see the finished book.
All right. We will catch you later.
Catch you later. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.